First case for argument is Matheny v. United States. Mr. Peters.
May it please the court, thank you for allowing me to argue this today. This is my first time here and I apologize in advance for any mistakes I may make.
Speak a little louder, I can't hear you.
Certainly, Your Honor. Susan Matheny was injured on January 18th of 2003 in a sledding accident which occurred at the Indiana National Dunes Lakeshore.
Counsel, I have a jurisdictional question for you.
Certainly.
Why is this case here? The case was resolved by a magistrate judge, and unless both parties have consented to final decision by a magistrate judge, the complaint lies to the district judge rather than this court.
We had so consented, Your Honor.
Well, our rules require the date of consents to be in your brief. I looked. It's not. The appellee says the jurisdictional statement is clear and correct. It's complete and correct. It's not. And we then went and checked the docket of the district court, and the district court's docket does not contain any notation that you consented. The consents are not in the record. So although you may have consented in your mind, there do not appear to be any consents in this record. Where should we go from there?
Your Honor, I would ask that the court hear the matter and that we did consent.
I can't hear you. You'll have to speak up.
I would ask that the court hear the matter, this court hear the matter, and that we had consented to the magistrate deciding the issue, and we had consented to him trying the issue as well, and we're scheduled to go to trial before him.
What do you mean you're scheduled to go before him? This case is over.
We had been scheduled prior to the summary judgment.
Well, is it your position that the record contains the consents?
Having not looked for them, I would take the position that it either contains the consent, but you having told me that it doesn't, I would take the position that through inadvertence or oversight, they're not there, but I'm certain that we executed the appropriate consents.
Perhaps you might think it prudent, before we dismiss this appeal for lack of jurisdiction, to check the record, and if it does not contain the consents, file an appropriate motion under Rule 10.
Yes, sir.
If I can continue. The issue in this case is whether or not the government acted with malice. Approximately one year to the day prior to my client's injury, a little girl 5 years of age was injured sledding down the same hill. She struck a pipe that was sticking approximately 18 inches out of the ground at the bottom of this sledding hill. The government's argument is that under the recreational use statute that I'm not entitled to bring this suit against the government, that they're immune from liability. My argument is that this is a malicious act, that you can't continue to allow that pipe, which they took a picture of, to injure children and women or anyone who's sliding down that hill. That hill was used for sledding for a period of 30 years. In excess of 30 years. As long as I can remember, people have sledded down this hill.
As long as you can remember? Are you testifying as a witness here?
No, but according to the affidavits,
show?
30 years. In excess of 30
years.
Let's
just confine ourselves to the
Certainly.
Record.
And in 1999, they began to prohibit sledding on that particular hill and throughout the park other than one hill. But they didn't post any notices. They published two publications in newspapers, which the plaintiff in this case did not see as contained in her affidavit. And I would submit that that's inadequate notice. Similar to what this court ruled, and I believe this panel ruled in Williams, which was an Illinois case, the Devil's Kitchen Lake case, that those notices were inadequate at best. Malice is defined under Indiana law. Those definitions are contained in the briefs of the parties, but clearly this activity by the government in taking pictures of the pipe, failing to remove it, and then 1 year later, this woman striking the same pipe falls within the definition of Indiana's malicious act. And I would submit to the court that this was a malicious act. In regards to the invited guest, looking at the case of Williams versus USA, and I'm sorry, I misquoted, the Devil's Kitchen case was Davis versus USA, but looking at Williams versus USA, where they talk about invited guests and the parks asking these people to come and participate in programs, etc., clearly the park wants and desires for people to come to the park.
For purposes of sledding?
Well, I would say that given the length of time and the knowledge of the government that people sled down that particular hill, that that's a constructive invitation under Indiana law as discussed in Burrell.
Why wouldn't that simply equate to licensee status, tacit permission but not invitation?
And I would concede that perhaps it does, but my only argument in that regard is that you allow this contact to go on for a period of 30 years as evidenced in this record, that, I mean, this isn't an isolated incident. When the plaintiff arrived at the hill, there were numerous people sledding up and down the hill, and that's consistently used for that purpose. You don't cite them, similar to what was discussed in the Davis case where there were some citations issued. You don't issue citations. You don't post any signs until after this plaintiff's accident in 2003. After the accident in 2002, still no warning signs were issued. So everybody knows you're using it for sledding. I would say that's an implied invitation. And if it were a child, it would be a constructive nuisance, which is the other exception under the IRUS, Indiana Recreational Use Statute. And I believe that concludes my time, unless there are questions.
Thank you, Mr. Peters. Mr. Reed?
Joe Reed, Assistant U.S. Attorney, Northern District of Indiana for the United States. May it please the court. I'll just address Mr. Peters' points quickly.
Shall we start with jurisdiction? What does the record show about consents to final decision by a magistrate judge?
Your Honor, I'm the author of the brief, and I thought his jurisdictional statement was complete and correct. I know
well,
you can't
it's
waive
transparently not. Our rules are explicit about this.
But I agree with counsel. We did sign consents. Why they're not in the record on the court's review, I do not
Perhaps
know.
Perhaps the two of you might be able to get together, file the appropriate Rule 10 motion, and get them in the record.
Yes. I can't explain their absence.
Let us know.
We signed them. As to the malice issue, I think there are two issues in the case. I disagree with Mr. Peters, who said the issue is malice. I think there's two issues. One, there's an Indiana recreational use statute. She needs to show either some facts that we can go try that she is an invitee, that her status on the land was an invitee under the IRUS, under the Indiana Recreational Use Statute, or she needs to show that the park acted with malice.
Well, what about if she's just a licensee? Is avoiding malice the only duty to licensees?
Under the recreational use statute, yes.
What about a known trap? As you know there are licensees roaming around sledding, and suppose you know that there's a hidden trap, a pipe that's covered by snow,
I have
dangerous to sledders.
Two responses to that. First, assuming this pipe was known, which was actually known to the park, which I think that is a spin on the record that is spin on the facts that this record doesn't support. If a trap is placed with a mischievous or an evil heart...
No. Look, I don't know, maybe the Indiana Recreation Use Statute, but the standard common law rule is that if you know that there's something dangerous on your land, and you have licensees, not trespassers, they're not invitees, but they're not trespassers, you know they're there, you don't care one way or the other, you know there's a trap, then don't you have a duty to eliminate the trap? Isn't that standard property law? Not discussed in the briefs, but...
It is not discussed in the brief. It's not raised in the brief. I think that's... And I think you're accurate about perhaps common law. The IRS was adopted for a special purpose.
The Illinois recreational use.
In Indiana recreational use statute.
Yeah. If you could avoid acronyms that we don't know, that
Thank
would be
you.
Helpful.
The Indiana recreational use statute was adopted for a purpose, and that's so people would open their land to recreational users. My view is, as to dangerous conditions on or about the land, I think the Indiana recreational use statute requires an affirmative act to have been done with malice or an illegal act. That's what the act says, and
well,
that's what it means.
The question is whether that exception to the immunity conferred by the recreational use statute was intended to codify the common law rule that Judge Posner is referring to.
I think not.
Why not?
Pardon me?
Why not?
Two things lead me to that conclusion. First, the Indiana recreational use statute, I think we do mention this in the brief and in the summary judgment materials, there is a defense for acts of third parties. The landowner isn't on the hook for acts of third parties.
That's
be it
a separate
another.
Category of immunity under the Act, and that's not implicated here, right?
Okay. I think it is. Yes, I think it is.
How so?
However this piece of pipe got there wasn't placed there by the park officials. I think it's a piece of salvage materials, evidenced by the fact that it's clearly a sawn piece of pipe, or it's placed there by perhaps another beachgoer to hold up an umbrella or to hold up a volleyball net.
So it's not a condition of the property that falls within the immunity conferred by the first section, the general immunity for landowners under the statute? In other words, this case falls within the second category of immunity?
Well, I think it falls under both. Yes, I think the statute covers both, and the statute offers both defenses.
I understand the statute does cover both, but let me ask it this way. What does the record reflect about how the pipe came to be there? Does the record reflect that it is attributable to the act of a third party?
The summary judgment materials indicate that, and there's no contest about this, the park did not place this pipe there. This is the pipe which we believe, and we're not even sure what pipe this lady struck, but assuming that it's the same pipe Mr. Peters is talking about, this 4-foot section of well pipe, if that's what it is, how it got there, no one knows. This is a sand dune. This particular pipe was at the foot of the sand dune leading out to the beach. At this site, there were 100 by 25 foot lots sold off in the 1800s or early 1900s, and shanties, tents, what have you, were placed there, and the pipe may have been a remnant of a prior owner that is covered and uncovered by shifting sand, or it may have been placed there by a beachgoer. No one knows the origin of the pipe. No one knows who left it. That's just the state of the record. But we do know the park didn't place it there. And we also know, had the park, had Ranger Tadich in his affidavit, had he been aware that this pipe was there, he would have caused its removal, and no one intended that anyone get hurt. We believe that speaks to the malice issue. And the trap issue, because to have a trap, one would say there needs to be a condition which you are aware of and which the statute would require you to, with mischief in your heart or malice in your heart or, you know, some evil design, maybe you're going to hurt somebody, leave it there. That's not our case.
What does malice mean in this statute? We know, for example, in defamation, malice doesn't mean, you know, malicious motive or evil motive. It just means knowledge or knowledge or, you know, reckless indifference.
Mischievous.
So if your guys knew that there were these traps, wouldn't that be enough for malice? Or maybe malice has some special meaning. Is there any?
I believe
malice. On what malice means in the statute.
Under the statute. The statute uses the term illegal.
I'm asking you what malice means in the statute.
Yes, sir. Illegal acts or malice.
Yes, what does malice mean, please?
Done with it's an affirmative act with evil intent or a mischievous bent.
What's your evidence that it's being used in the evil intent sense rather than, let's say, the sense it bears in defamation?
Reckless. I believe that
in defamation, it means basically knowledge that what you're saying is untrue. Okay, so does it mean something different in this statute? And if so, what's your basis for thinking that? Has it been construed by Indiana courts?
The word has not, to my knowledge, sir.
Okay, well, that it?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you, Mr.
Thank
Reed.
You.
So, Mr. Peters, how much time does he have? 3 minutes? Do you have anything further?
Just briefly, thank you, Your Honor. They say they didn't know that it was there, but they took a picture of it, which is contained in the record and dated on the photo February 2, I believe, of 2002, a year prior to the accident. The affidavits of the persons involved in the 2002 accident contained in the record indicate that this is the same pipe. The pipe has a distinctive cap on the top of it. It was not removed by the Park Service until after my client was injured, after she was seriously injured. Grievously injured, and I would submit to leave that pipe.
Let me ask you the same question that Judge Posner just asked. That is, do you know of any decision by an Indiana court defining the word malice as used in this statute?
Well, as cited in my brief, because the Reed Court, which is a federal court, did interpret it, but I'm not going to discuss that. But in my brief, malice is a general...
Do you know of a decision by an Indiana court?
On this particular statute or malice in general? Yes, I do, Judge.
No, on this statute? On
this
malice
statute.
In this statute.
It's never been decided.
Okay.
So I would leave that to this.
If it's not there,
court.
It's not there. That's life.
So they took a picture of it, and I believe that shows malice. That, you know, Reed talks about a social duty, ignoring a social duty. You cannot allow people to sled down these hills and hit pipes that you know and took a picture of a year prior.
How are you suggesting we interpret the malice exception in the statute if there are no Indiana Supreme Court cases doing so? You know, before we decide whether your facts fit the standard, we have to know what it means.
Well, the Supreme Court in Indiana defined malice as a general sense of recklessness as regards the lives and safety of others.
Okay. In this statute, or is that defining malice
just
in another?
In general, in 1973, under Blackburn versus State.
And what was the context of that?
The context of that was not under this statute, just general malice and recklessness.
For purposes of the common law, for purposes
yes.
of another statute?
No, common law.
Okay.
So I would request that the court follow that law. Thank you. I appreciate your time.
Okay, and just to formalize what Judge Easterbrook said, we'd like you to, if it is correct, if you sign those consents, we'd like you to file a motion under Rule 10 of our rules for correction of the record to show that. And the dates, which is required by Rule 28, the date of the signing of the consent.